the guys from Ping, they've kind of shown me how much the equipment matters.
I just love that I can hit any shot I kind of want.
We're going to be able to tell some fun stories about what goes on here to help golfers play better golf.
Welcome back to the Ping Proving Grounds podcast. We've got an awesome reserve in today, Christian Pena filling in for Marty Jurtson here at Augusta National. We also got a guy by the name of Bubba Watson. You may have heard of him before, two-time Masters champion. Christian, I want to start here, though. Bubba, the nice guy that he is, brought you to Augusta National a couple years ago, and you got a chance to play alongside Bubba, although he made you play pretty far back.
Well, it was far back, and the one thing about Bubba, he's got a great heart, and he brought me to Augusta National and John K. Solheim, our president, last March, and the dream come true for me. Love
first,
this golf.
First time playing?
First time, oh yeah, first time pretty much on the golf course, because as a rep, when I worked here, you're not allowed to go inside the ropes. And so we came, we had a great time. I mean, Bubba did say, hey, Christian, you were not playing the members tees. You were going to come back and play with me like a man. And so I manned up, even though all 55 years, well, I was 54 last year, but it's really long. I'll just say that. And I didn't know that there's only championship tees and member tees. But it was fun. It was a dream come true. We had a great time. Bubba's taken care of me over the years. Like, I've played a lot of golf with him, and he's taken me to some really cool places. This is number one. So anyway, it was great.
Tough to beat that. Bubba, can you kind of dive into the experience, how his game was, how he played from the back tees, how many head covers he pulled out on the par fours?
Oh, gosh, I lost count. But the key is, though, you don't want to leave being an ex-professional golfer, as you are, and a champion in Japan, it is?
Yeah, hey, good memory.
And so I love when the Japanese media comes up and takes pictures of you and talks about all the history. So anyway, that's a different podcast. So my thing is, though, when you come to Augusta and you play and you have any kind of ability, you want to be back there.
Totally.
You have to. Like, why say that you played Augusta National and you played the uptees? Like, you want to say you played all the way back. You saw how difficult it is. You felt it, and you're like, man. And now you can appreciate it when you watch it on TV, right? You can see the struggles. You can be like, oh, yeah, I felt that struggle. Number 11 is a struggle for everybody. So there's guys this week. I don't even know what the weather is going to be on Saturday, but this week guys are going to have head covers off. So
yeah, it was. He's right. It was a great experience from the back. And what is always amazing to me is Bubba and how he plays the game. And like from the back tees, how easy he can make the golf course look and the shots that he hit. I remember, I'm just going to tell a story. Sorry, Shane. So 15, he had like a little, he has two drives, his dink drive and then his bomb. And he hit the little dinker out there. Didn't really hit one hard. And it was probably 250 to the pin and it was back left. And he says, you know what? I want to try out this 3-wood. I want to try to hit this shot. And he hit this 40-yard slice 3-wood. That I swear it was coming in sideways to that pin. I don't even know if it went over the water. I think it went around the water and then hit like the middle of the green and rolled right past the pin. I think he almost made a 2. It's probably the best shot I've ever seen. It was just, I mean, it was amazing. So like for me, I'm just like a, you know, giddy guy just watching a great player play golf. And it was amazing.
Bubba, the way you've played golf over the years, I mean, it's must-watch TV. I mean, you know, especially when you're winning those Masters Championships. I mean, I will never forget the tee shot you hit on 13. We'll get to that in a little bit. I don't know if that was the line you were picking, but we'll ask you about that in a bit. But shots like that, you know, the 40-yard cut or, you know, the wedge shot you hit in the playoff, do you see lines or is it just the feel in your hands that makes sense to you to be able to pull off these golf shots that even a lot of pros wouldn't have either the guts or the ability to pull off?
Yeah, it comes down to feel, right? You see the shot. You visualize the shot. You've hit it before. The shot that he was talking about with the slice 3-wood, that's 250, right? So a 3-wood's going to go further than that. If I hit a dead straight 3-wood. So you don't have the club, right? You can only allow 14. So
right.
you got to figure out a way to do it. And so the 40-yard slice is just a way for me to get it up and get spin on it, but slow it down, right? And so that's what I envision. That's what I see with the pin on that side, the left side. So I'm always trying to figure out, so if I don't slice it, now we still have a room over here and we can chip to the hole. So that's what I'm seeing in my head. Now to pull it off is a whole different ball game. But yeah, so visually, mentally, I picture this shot and I can see myself pulling it off because I've done it with buddies and things like that. Now under the gun, can you pull it off at that one moment? And luckily I pulled the shots off twice around this place, so it worked out.
Do you see like a start line? Do you pick, you know, like Jack Nicklaus famously picked a spot, you know, 3 or 4 feet in front of him? Are you picking a spot to kind of cut it off of? Or again, I mean, I know you're such a field player. Does it just, again, your hands and your brain, it just kind of makes sense to be able to kind of cut something, you know, 40 yards onto a pin that you know it's going to kind of land in the area too?
Yeah, so it depends on the shot, right? So like a 3-wood, it's more of like, I want to aim it far enough over. So you're going to, and then off a tee, you're actually looking for something, right?
Okay.
So I'm looking for a tree, maybe if it's a crowd, it's a person, or edge of a bunker. I'm looking at something way in the distance to start it, and then just then feed it off of there. The big slices, you're basically, especially under gun or under the pressure, you're aiming it and going, okay, if I really slice this, I'm barely going to get in the rough on the left. If I underslice it, we're just going to be in the right rough. So long as I slice it, I'm good, right? You hit it perfect in the middle of the fairway. So you're trying to play the percentages in your favor.
So this is your 16th start here at Augusta National.
Okay.
I wanted to go back to your first. It was 2008. I believe you got into that because of your great play at the U.S. Open at Oakmont.
Yeah.
I think that's how you got into it at 08. Do you remember your first Masters? Can you kind of take us back to like nervy young Bubba Watson playing at the Masters for the first time, obviously having so much history in the state?
You know, there was a lot going on that week. 2007 finished fifth at the U.S. Open. Not that I'm mad about going bogey, bogey the last two holes.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I got to call my dad. It was Father's Day after the U.S. Open, and I called my dad and said, we're going to the Masters, and he was excited. And so we get there, and Boo Weekly, he's Slocum. They're my idols. They were the guys I looked up to when I was in middle school. They played in the same high school I went to. They were older, so they were out of high school when I got there. But those are the two guys that I wanted to emulate when I got to high school. And so for them to be at the Masters, that's the only year that all three of us were at the Masters.
Awesome.
And so our hometown, it was a big news for our hometown, right? It's one of those things that I think there was a couple stories written about that, but three guys from the same small town, same high school, were here. So that's really what I remember. I remember playing a practice round with them, goofing around with them, and always seeing them. Those were the faces I could remember, I knew and I could talk to. And it was all new to me with the other guys, and the Masters was new. And my caddy, Ted Scott at the time, he was like, man, just drink it in. You know, you're good enough. You're going to be back here. You know, you never think that. You shouldn't think that. You should always be grinding towards making it back. But so really the golf itself, I really didn't pay much attention about that. So I don't even know what I finished. I think it was pretty high up. I know I made the cut, but then in 2009, I wasn't here, so that one kind of upset me. So then I wanted to get back.
T20 not, by the way. T20 that week.
But it was a low last round, maybe?
Yeah, I think you played really well the last round.
Yeah, so.
I want to talk about 2012, because you were trailing headed into the final round. I'm not sure if people remember that you went on that tear late. I think you birdied four holes in a row, right? Starting at 13.
Yep.
Not in the playoff, but what was it like for you? I know you're a guy, like, you've talked about dealing with pressure and how it's been like for you to deal with pressure over the years. What was it like in that atmosphere comparatively to other golf tournaments that you've been in the hunt in and that you've won in the past? And how did you handle those nerves coming down the stretch with that great play late?
You know, it was crazy. Louis Oosthuizen made the double eagle on
right.
two, right? I think he had a 4-iron. I had an 8-iron in there, and he had a 4-iron.
You had an 8-iron into two?
Yeah, it was, the wind was just perfect. I hammered one. But Louis, his ball like took forever. It landed like, I think it landed just short of the green, but it was firm, so it rolled and took the break to that back pin and went in. By the time I'm getting ready to hit, the crowd erupts. And I was like, the ball hasn't stopped rolling yet. And so then I sliced it over into the left trap. But at that moment, when he hold that, and I think I might have made birdie, I might have made par, I'm not sure, but I'm 4 back of him. And so at that moment, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm 4 back of him, and I think somebody else might have been tied for the lead at that moment or one up. So I'm looking at this going, okay, we've just played two holes. I'm 4 back. Let's have a top 10. Let's have a top 5. Because I remember the U.S. Open, how big this is to get a top 10 or a top 5. It gets you in other events and
right.
blah, 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 right? And so I wanted to be able to say I played well at the Masters at least one year. So that's where my mindset went. And then Teddy on the bag, Teddy always tried to keep me in the moment, and he was always talking about that. He was always like, look, a top 5 here is amazing. I mean, things can happen. You shoot even from here out, you'll probably move up the board, right? Just because of things, because of pressure. So we just keep battling. And next thing you know, I bogey. I'm just off the green on 12, but I bogeyed it. I count it as a three putt, even though it wasn't a three putt. And then that's when, again, Teddy was in my ear, and I was already saying it to myself, but keep fighting. Like, you've got a par, you got two par fives, you can still have a great finish. You're still top 10. You're still this. And then you go birdie, and then me and Teddy, we were on, what hole was that, 14. And I remember years ago, I remember shots, and Tiger, and I've seen other people do it, where you hit it to that back fringe.
Yeah, ran it up the hill.
And spins, yep. or if you hit it long enough drive, you spin it back.
Right.
And so I told him, I told Teddy, I said, hey, what if we hit it to that fringe just to the left and spin it back down the hill? And he was like, yeah, that's perfect. Or roll it back down the hill, whatever, how firm the greens are. And it rolled back down to, I don't know, 7 feet, and I made it. And then, you know, okay, we still have a great finish. Let's finish strong. So you're not even thinking about anything at that. You're not thinking about winning. You're not into that. So I hit a great tee shot straight down the middle. I hit a 7-iron in there. Left it about 3 feet short from 20 feet.
On 15?
Yeah, on 15. So I made that putt. And I still, at this moment, I sit there, we talk about, yeah, we're one back. But you don't really put any thought into it. Because at the whole time, all you're talking about is a good finish. And then when I hit the 8-iron, I sliced the 8-iron in there and made that. And my putter raised. That's the first moment I was like, here we go.
Okay.
And then when I walked to 17, I'll never forget it. This is the worst thing I could ever do. I was like, oh, my gosh, we're tied for the lead. We have a chance to win. And Teddy goes, yeah, I know, man. And he goes, and then, but, like, it's the same thought he had, maybe I had. It was just like that moment where we forgot everything we talked about all week. You know, having my son, we just adopted my son and all these things. And so we were talking about all this positive stuff. And that one moment we elapsed and went, and I sliced that drive so far on 17.
Was Eisenhower still up at that time? It had to have been, right? In 2012, I'm assuming. There had to have been that tree over there on 17. I'm assuming in 2012 it was.
Yeah, it could. Yes. I think so. Yeah. Yes. But, you know, we don't even see that tree because that tree's, you guys, that's not far, in play, yeah. Right? And so, but yeah, so we lost our minds for a second, and just enough where I could slice it. And so that's where we just, yeah. So coming back, those four birdies in a row was amazing. But it was just, we never thought about winning. We never did. We just focused on having a good finish, and then we get panicked on 17. But yeah.
Made par on 17 and 18, obviously,
made par
getting
on
that playoff.
17 and 18,
and then,
yeah.
You know, I read that you said, I'm never going to go down there and hit that wedge shot again, right? The playoff wedge shot you've hit. Do you ever go down there and look?
I've hit it one time. I hit it with Ted Scott. I brought Ted to play, and I used a 9-iron with him.
Because you used gap wedge when you hit it? Is that right?
I used gap wedge, 52 degree. But I flipped over his 9-iron and hooked it with a right-handed club.
Hit the green? Maybe.
Doesn't matter.
All right. I mean,
we've been trying to go down there and find it, I think. Have they changed trees and stuff down there?
They've added some trees.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because every time, the time we came out, and even when we go gallery out there, we go down there, I'm like, I don't know where this spot is.
Yeah, they've added some trees. I remember a couple years ago, before they added the trees, me and Angie flew in here to play, and they said, hey, do you want to see the spot? And Angie was like, yeah, I'll see it. And so they got it, GPS pinpoint. And when our group was on 8, they said, hey, they came up to us and said, we put a flag right where it is. Because there's nobody in front of us, so nobody else would know what they were doing. So they did it secretly. And so we went over there, and guys we were playing with went and looked at it, but they had a flag, you know, a little flag just sitting around. Yeah, they could do it with GPS.
I mean, it's one of the great shots in Masters history. I mean, when you really think about it, I think every time I watch it, not only am I impressed by how much you move the ball, but I mean, it's just so cool because it rips close. You know,
yeah,
I mean, it had so much side spin,
when
and
you
it
can,
ripped, yeah,
you
like
can
you rip
it
up the hill,
yeah.
Which is just so wild. Where's the gold wedge? Because Ping made you the gold wedge as opposed to the gold putter. Where's the gold wedge? Is it at home? Is it in a trophy case?
It's at home in the trophy in the office in the trophy room. Yeah, so I it's sitting right there, and the same as the putter as well. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I think it saved them money by doing a wedge because it was hollow inside. So they were like, hey, right. Saved us $3,000.
They need more players to hit wedge shots to win major championships.
Well, I mean, gold putters, when you win a major, you get a solid gold putter.
Right.
So
yeah.
He's got a couple of them. Yeah. And we're counting on him. I mean, we're really looking forward to another major winner. And so we need you to be our guy. You've been our guy in the past.
I got lucky too, by the way. My wedge, I have a gold plated. Because they make gold plated for inside the vault, and so I have a gold plated wedge that they did special for some reason, and so they already had one in the vault, so they're like, hey man, do you want this one too? So I have that in my
two.
So I've got the gold plated one just like the vault, and I have the solid gold one.
I want to ask about 2014.
Okay.
I mean, you know, like everybody knows Jordan Spieth now. At the time, he's this kid. I mean, he was, you know, burst on the scene. What is he, 20, 21 years old when he's battling you?
If that.
He takes the lead early in that final round, and then you made birdies in the middle of the round to kind of grab hold of that Masters. But I mentioned the tee shot on 13. I remember this was like hot and heavy Twitter days, Bubba, when this was happening. And this was like pre-video all across the board. Like, you didn't have every shot like they have now on the Masters app. And I remember I screen grabbed the tee shot because it looked like when you hit it, I don't know if you remember. I mean, it was kind of an anxious look. Everybody was kind of looking. And then it flies and you have what, like sand wedge into 13. Was that left of your line? What was the line you were trying to take on 13?
So let's go with the first part, though. Jordan Spieth was coming on the scene. Great player, obviously. He was young. I mean, I don't even know if he was 21, was he? And so he birdies seven, the bowl pin. I plug it in the lip on seven, but I can use the bowl to help me. So I hit it, make par. So I'm three down. With and Teddy and me, we're talking about it, and we're like, hey man, he doesn't know the pressure yet. You've dealt with the pressure. You've succeeded in the pressure. 2 years ago, you know what the pressure's going to be like. You know what you have to do. And then, you know, luckily for me, bad for him, I birdie eight, hit 6 iron into eight. It was downwind, hit 6 iron into eight, just over the green, made birdie. He hits it off to the side, hits it on about 35 feet, three putts. So now I'm one back. I go to nine, I hit a beautiful shot to 10 feet. He hits it just off the side, three putt. Well, he was just off the green, but he three putted. I birdie, so now I'm one up, right? So like, whoa. So then I just hung on. Nobody really. We both bogeyed 10, I think, and then nobody really did anything. He hit it in the water, but made a phenomenal bogey on 12.
Right.
So now we go to 13, and I'm at that time. I think I'm three up.
Yeah, you might have been two up
because I birdied 13. So yes, you know, you're the wind is. Like I said, on eight, it's kind of like eight. You're downwind, and so I'm going over these trees, but usually when I try to just hammer one, it's going to be a slight draw. You pull it, whatever, right? So I was like, okay, as long as you don't miss it that way. And, you know, when you're trying to fight, make sure you don't pull hook it or pull it, you kind of leave it open. And so I left it a little open, and I knew I hammered it. I mean, I couldn't hit it any better on the smash factor or whatever. And so... Now we're just waiting. I'm like, oh gosh. And you're like, you're listening to see if you hear a tree, right? And then when the crowd erupts, that's when you're like, okay, we're good. You know, when a crowd cheers for your drive, and that's when Jordan was like, hold on a second. Wait a second. Because we were listening, right? We were listening to hear it. And then we get up there. I mean, I have this beautiful picture. It's framed up. I asked the Masters for it. Teddy has one too. There's two that I know of, that we got framed up, and it's only me and Teddy. I'm hitting my shot. I'm 120 to the front, 140 hole. I've got a 56 degree, trying to hit the, you know, 130 and then let it spin down to the hole. And out of the whole tournament, it's Sunday of the Masters. Jordan Spieth is, you know, he kind of left his drive out. I mean, I hit a ridiculous drive, but right. He hit a drive out. So he's 100 plus yards away from me, and there's nobody. You see the camera tower behind the green, you see the flag, and you see me and Teddy, and you see me at impact. I'm right here. There's nobody. And so I said, this is the greatest picture I've ever seen for us. And so I have one hanging up in my house. Teddy has one at his house. But going back to the tee shot, it was a lot of luck involved. But but what we've always said, it doesn't matter how great you're playing or how great you're playing, there has to be something during the week that changes the momentum. I don't believe in luck. I don't believe in this, but breaks have to go your way. It's your moment. It's your time. It's whatever. My ball went through the trees. It had to touch something, right? But it made it through. Look at shots that we've seen everybody hit around the Augusta, not only Augusta, but every golf tournament. They made a putt. They chipped in on a Thursday. They made a long putt on a Friday to make the cut, and then they shoot crazy on the weekend in LA, like a 64-64. Wait, who did that?
But, you know, like ball stays up. I mean, you're so right. I always say we don't, I think in golf coverage, because golf's so long, we don't go back to those Thursdays and Friday breaks enough.
Right.
You know, because you talk so much about Saturday and Sunday. And, I mean, I remember James Hahn years ago when he missed all those cuts in a row, and then he won Wells Fargo. I think he missed seven cuts in a row and won Wells Fargo. Yep. I was talking to him about it one time, and he said he'd hit it in a divot on Thursday and go, this is why we're going to miss the cut. you know, it was negative talk to himself. Yeah. And then he said, I remember his caddy saying, we got to stop doing that. Let's try to pull something off when we hit it in a bad spot or do something. And literally that was the mental switch that happened. And he goes on to win after missing seven cuts. Like, you've got to almost embrace the things when something good happens, like on 13, didn't hit anything, I'm in the green, I better make birdie here, right? Like, I got to pull off the golf shot, and that gave you the opportunity to kind of take hold of that tournament.
Right. There's a lot of times the guy that has the best ball striking week does not win.
Right.
That's why I say in a tournament, if you can top 10 in any tournament in the world, or you can top 5, you're playing really good. There was a little 1% difference in you and the next guy. He chipped in twice for the week, so he beat you. Or he made a 50-footer that you didn't make. So it's a fine line, and that was my moment. There was other moments, but that was one that was like, hey, maybe it's meant to be. And then nobody else birdied, so I got lucky. I could just struggle my way in.
You say that too, like 13. If I remember correctly, that was a year they had a big freeze, and a lot of the trees were dead. They didn't have as many leaves on them. I don't know if you remember that.
Mm.
So, like, your ball's going through there, and usually it's really lush. And so you have all these different factors over, I call it providence.
Yeah.
And here comes your ball, it's going through, and then it lands in the fairway. And I'm like, this is his. I mean, like you said, I think I'm with you. Not necessarily the luck. Like, it was providence. All these little things happened over the year. And then you get here, you hit this beautiful drive over there, goes right through the tree. Well, over, through, whatever you want to call it.
We'll say over. We'll say over. It's been a while.
Over the fairway, right? And then, right. I mean, it was beautiful. It was
so
awesome.
So then, let's go back to that. I got two things. Not that you care, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
We do.
We care.
So number 11, Friday, my ball
is 2014.
And 14. Yep. My ball is in this pine straw, and Teddy looks at me. And
right or left?
I'm right.
So you're right in the pine straw there.
So, you know, you got to aim it, for me, being left-handed, I got to aim it over the water and hook it.
Right.
And Teddy was like, man, we just need to lay up. And I said, nah, man, I got this shot. It's a hook, man. I got this shot. And I took out a 9-iron, and it was stupid. It was 190 or something to the pin or whatever. So I took out this 9-iron. I've got to aim left of the water. So I hooked it more than I hooked it in the playoff same year. And it's a nasty lie. And I just rope hooked this bullet, and it just catches the slope right on the front of the green. And he goes, but before we hit, he goes, you're one under, man. Like, this is, we missed the cut, right? If you hit this, make a triple, whatever, right? And I said, nah, man, this is easy, man. I got this shot. And so I pull it off, right? But then you go to, so then you go to 15 on Sunday. And I don't know if you remember, but I hit it in the pine straw, you know, that little inlet of trees.
Yep.
On the left, I'm in the pine straws. They've added some trees, by the way, just for the record.
On 15.
Because I've been there before and I can't do the shot again. So I'm in there in the pine straw, and Teddy looks at me, and he's like, I was like, I'm not laying up 40 yards down the fairway. Like, I'm not doing that. And I said, we got a wide open shot. We got 184 to the front, man. It's like, dude, I do this every day of my life. And I was like, I'm going to hit a 6-iron, hit it low. We're going to go over the green, just on the left of the bunker. Pin's in the back middle. You know how that pin, kind of traditional pin we've used to
right.
many years. And we can chip it short of the green and two-putt it for par. And walk out of here, and we're still leading. And he goes, all right, man, if you can do it. I thought, man, this is easy. I know I can do this.
I love this.
And so but, you know, when I watch coverage with my family and listen to people, the commentators are like, what is he doing? Why is he doing that? And we've actually thought positively why we're doing it. Now I've got this downhill slope wedge shot, and I'm going to have to try to lift it and spin it and guess right on the distance to that green. I would rather go for it and then fat my chip shot than fat it in the water.
Totally.
So I'm looking at that, and so it's an easy shot for me. I was like, man, my 6-iron goes 200 yards. We're going to hit easy. We're going to hit it low, bullet, flat 185, 186. It's no problem. Boom. We do it just over the green, make par. And everybody's like, why would he do that? Well, because that was the best opportunity for me to make par. Well, we fell. And so those are the moments. Like, again, I could have been behind the tree, right? And then I had to chip out, and then I hit it in the water and lost, right? So there's just moments that happen throughout the week, especially on Sunday, that moments that you don't think about at the time, but then at the end of it, you're like, man, I just missed winning because of this, this, and this, or I just won because of this, this, and this, right?
Right. Fancy dinner 2014 after the Masters win, right? Was that Waffle House night?
That was Waffle House night.
So what is a Bubba Watson Waffle House night
so
order?
Every time I go to Waffle House, I met the owners a couple weeks ago. It's pretty funny. people that started it. But they know my order, too. because of the Masters. But I get two grilled cheese, hash browns covered, double hash browns, two grilled cheese.
There you go.
On the same plate.
Okay.
And cover the hash browns, and then I just douse it all in ketchup.
Nice. I mean, no waffle, no breakfast food. I feel like you're kind of going like a little bit more. It doesn't matter. Time of day.
It doesn't matter if it's 7 a.m. That's right. It doesn't matter if it's 7 p.m, 2 a.m. It's the same exact.
I just have
a menu, by the way. They made me a menu.
But the Waffle House did.
And it's the champion special, and it's a little picture of me on there.
That's so good.
So I have it in my trophy room.
But that's like, I think we just heard Bubba Golf, how he plays golf, and then Bubba Eats.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
It's amazing. Like,
that's a new YouTube series.
You want comfort, right? The reason why I wanted to go over the green, so if I fat it, it won't be fat in the water.
Too.
So that was comfortable to me. Like it. Now it doesn't make sense in your head or the announcer's head, but that's where, in my head, it all makes sense. And when people say, "Man, you could do this, this, and this," I'm like, "Man, I've won 12 times, 2 majors. My career is better than I ever dreamed it would be." Yeah, who doesn't want to win 40 times? But some people just aren't cut out for it, right?
I mean, but the thing about Bubba Golf too is people always ask me, "Hey, when I go out to a tour event, any type of high level golf, who should I go watch?" And I'm like, "You got to go watch Bubba."
Of course.
I mean, I said, because you do think differently than most people. I'm boring. I try to hit it straight,
right
down the middle, not very far. You like to hit it high. You like to cut it. You like to hit it low, draw it. I mean, it's so much more fun to watch. And I wish I could do it. Bubba Golf is a real thing. And I tell people all the time, you have to go watch Bubba play golf because it's different than anybody else. And you're going to enjoy yourself.
I mean, it's always enjoyable. And especially in modern golf, so many players are trying to just simply hit the ball straight.
Yes.
Bubba's kind of a bit of a throwback in terms of the way he moves it. It's funny.
100%.
A buddy of mine played with you. I think I've told you the story before, but a buddy of mine played with you in a mini tour tournament years ago. And he was a good player. His name was Casey Broaddus. He played college golf in Texas. He played with you. I think it was a Tite Lights Tour event or an Adams event or something like that.
Yep.
But he said, "You're the only guy in all of his years of playing pro golf that he called his dad after and said, 'Remember the name Bubba Watson.'" He said, "You didn't necessarily shoot a great number. I think he said you shot 3 or 4 under. But he just said your ability to move the golf ball, how far you hit it. I think you had a pink shaft you painted yourself
at
the time. But he just said, this guy... it's different to watch." And I'm assuming you've heard that probably a lot in your life, is that it, even from pros, like I remember when you burst on the scene, Tiger loved playing practice rounds with you because it was different to watch the way you go about your business.
Yeah, for sure. My dad used to paint all my putter shafts and all my things like that. So my putter was definitely doctored up with paint and different things.
Is that where the pink came from your dad? Is that where the love of pink?
My dad loves bright colors and it stood out and it's easy to notice. And so pink, It made sense because it's funny, right? When a guy has a pink driver, then he outdrives you. You can't really make fun
of it,
right?
That's exactly right.
But then as I got older and became a professional golfer, it's like, how can we help people? People helped me to get here. So then we started Ping, let me do the pink drivers for charity. And we've helped many places around the world, but two hospitals, the one in Phoenix, the Children's Hospital in Phoenix, Children's Hospital in Pensacola, Florida. So that's what the pink drivers are for. But no, it's funny. I played with a couple guys this week that don't really – I've never played with. One guy I've never played with. And so I hit a couple shots that were Bubba-esque. And I could see him. He looked at me. He looked at his caddy. He looked back at me. He was like, "What was that?" And I said, "Well, I had to take some off, man. So I had to hit this big old slice and I had it like this." And he was like, "Okay.
This is what they talk about.
As he's laying up on this par five and I'm going for it, he's like, okay. I didn't see it, but okay." Yeah, so. But if you think about it, like Bryson DeChambeau, he plays a different game, but it's straight.
Correct.
He's trying to hit it miles, but straight. He's not trying to do all these curves and things. So he's still doing what everybody else is doing, trying to hit the ball dead straight. He's just going about it differently. He thinks differently. So that's the way he draws it up. We all draw it up differently.
Yeah, yours is just, I think, the prettiest drawing, in my opinion. Just the way, again, I mean, it's just fun to watch because it's just so different.
Right.
Yeah.
The shot tracers are messing up sometimes.
Thank goodness. Yeah, you know what?
For sure.
We needed the tracer like 5 years earlier for Bubba. Like prime Bubba curving the golf ball.
Well, I think it's great. Bubba fits the Ping brand great because, like the Solheims, like Carson was thinking outside the box when he was making his clubs. You know what I mean? Everybody's like, "Oh, this crazy guy is bringing out this putter. Nobody's going to like the putter." Right. And then once somebody gave it a chance, they're like, "Wow, this is really good." And I mean, I think it's been all the years I've been at Ping. I mean, Bubba and the relationship he has with John has been really special. And I think it's been a great relationship, a great partnership for many years and for many years to come. So, and you know, all the charity work he does, he's got a great heart. He's done so many great things. And I think, you know, a story I've never told anybody before, and I'll tell it now, but my daughter got sick when she was 15 years old. You know, she had leukemia, and he's a big donor at Phoenix Children's Hospital where we spent a lot of time, but I was gone for like 2 weeks, you know, 2 months, from helping the guys on the tour. And then, you know, I think the first week back, you know, I'm close with Bubba and Teddy both. And, you know, they were encouraging me all the time. They would text me, "Hey, we're praying for you, hang in there." And, you know, when I saw them, you know, they gave me a big hug and said, "Hey man, we're praying for you, got hang in there," and the whole thing. And these guys were really supportive. It wasn't like every player was texting me, but these guys stayed in touch with me all the time. They really were an encouragement. And a couple cool things he did for my daughter, he did a couple videos. One was with Ricky, I think, and P. Reed. And so, you know, my daughter knows Bubba and knows Ricky. She's like, "Oh, that's cool. That's Captain Jack." I was like, "Yeah, Ricky Fowler." You know, he used to look like Captain Jack back then. And then she loved Justin Bieber, and he's buddies with Justin Bieber. And they sent over a video to Gabby, "Hey, get well, be well." Awesome. And so, like, Bubba's always going to have a special place in my heart just through, you know, difficult times in life. I mean, him and Teddy both are really great, and they're a great encouragement to me. So, and then the work that they do for Phoenix Children's Hospital has been amazing. Like, it, we spent so much time there, and all the kids that they help is amazing. So,
when did you start wanting to get into the philanthropy? When did that become a part of you, not just as a person, but as a pro golfer? Because I feel like you got into it, I don't want to say, you know, earlier than most people do, but it felt like something that kind of popped up the moment you started to become a household name.
It's funny. When I was 14 years old, the golf course I was playing at, the guy that's got me started, he's a left-handed pro golfer, Hiram Cook. He loves junior golf, right? That's how you build the game of golf, right? The grassroots is not pro golfers on the PGA Tour or at the Masters. It's the club pros in the city. It's kind of like the churches. They know the people of the city, right?
Totally.
And so there was a Special Olympics group that used to come out. And I used to help with that. And he said, "Hey, why don't you come out and help?" And you learn so much. I mean, these guys and girls are just smiling and having a blast and all these things. So I used to do things like that, right? I didn't think that was helping, even though it was. Because time, some people don't have money. Some people just have time. Or some people have energy or a shoulder to cry on. Whatever that is, right? You can always help. And so for me, I saw that. And then as I get older, I'm like, hey, when I start realizing what a sponsor is, as a kid, I didn't know that these banners meant anything. You know, I'm playing a junior golf tournament, and there's a banner over here and there's a banner over there. What is that? And then the reason why my golf tournaments, my junior tournaments were free is because of these sponsors. Or if it was five, I remember tournaments were $5. Some tournaments, the big tournaments were, you know, there was a $100 fee, but my parents would pay for these. Or not pay because of sponsors and people helping, want to give back. So I learned that at a young age. But then when I finally started doing my own stuff and became a pro, I wanted to do it. Listening to these guys, John Solheim has been my granddad, right? And I know I'm putting an age with him, but that's who it was. Because obviously he can't take the place of my dad, but he's my dad figure. And so that's the guy that I ran information by, asked him questions. Even though he wanted me to be at the Pink staff, he said, "Look, man, if there's a deal out there that's better for you and your family, you leave Pink. Take this hat off and go somewhere else, right? Like, that's, I'll drive you there." And that always stuck with me. And I know how much they give. They don't tell the world how much they give and what they do and what they're helping. And so that's where it just started resonating with me and who I want to be as a person. Where I come from, there's somebody helped me throughout all my years. And so I wanted to give back. And then when you start thinking about, like, my wife, we had to adopt both of our kids. How would you not want to help kids? Kids are born into a situation. They're not asking to be in that situation. And whatever that situation is, bad or good, it just happens, right? So let's help them develop and grow. Maybe they're going to change the world. Maybe they'll change cancer. Maybe they'll be the next president or whatever. So that's why I always want to help the kids. And then getting involved with hospitals is an amazing journey in itself. And then, you know, so I've done a lot of things outside the U.S., a lot of things inside the U.S., but the hospitals have probably been the best, because the Watson name will go away. The ping, the people of Ping will go away, but the hospital's still going to be giving.
Right.
And so your legacy is still going to be part of that history.
How is your relationship with pro golf right now? I mean, are you still passionate about it? Do you still love it? I remember years ago, I think you said maybe that if you win 10 times, you were going to walk away from it. Is that right? Did you say that years and years and years ago?
I said I might just walk away because I never, you know, I always had a dream to get that card.
Right.
You know, the PGA Tour card. They actually gave, I don't know if they give now, but back then they gave
a card. Oh, yeah. They stamp your name and do that whole thing.
Right. Oh, yeah. And so it was cool, right? I had it and my interview, I never got a word out because I was crying so bad. And then you actually win a tournament and you're like, well, I guess I got to change my goals. I got to win again. So then I set my goal at 10, unreachable. I'm at 1, and now I'm going to get it 10. It's an unreachable goal. And then I get there, and you're like, I guess I got to change my goals.
Right,
always have a goal, right? And so right now, to be honest with you, I retired from the PGA Tour. I put in my resignation and went to LIV. And the reason why I went to LIV, there's many reasons, but one of the big reasons I went to LIV is – it's lonely out here. It's very lonely out here. Now, you have guys, but he's working with a bunch of guys. There's other people.
Right.
My caddy's got friends. I mean, it's very lonely. And now having a team, and not to keep talking about him, but Matthew Wolf. I see a lot of me in Matthew Wolf. Matthew Wolf is a talent that we rarely get to see. And so when you think about a 24-year-old, he was, I think, 12th in the world or 14th in the world at age 20. At age 20 now. And then went through some struggles. I've been through some struggles. So going back to the 10 wins, I wanted to retire. I wrote a book about my issues, my mental issues, because I don't – Anthony Kim, there's a lot of people I'm mentioning now. Anthony Kim mentioned it last week that you're lonely. He felt lonely. A million people could be around you, but you still feel lonely.
Right.
And that's how I feel. That's how I felt. And I didn't know how to deal with it, and so – I wrote the book to help me, but help other people. And then Matthew Wolf, I see a lot of him in me, or me in him, or however you want to word it. And such a great talent, better talent than I've ever been. But forget his talent. Who he is as a person is what I want to help. So LIV is giving me that opportunity. Being a team golf gives me the opportunity to help people around me and just be a light for the people. I don't even have to say words to you, but if you watch what I'm doing, how when I leave my wife or how I greet my wife, I always give her a kiss because it could be the last time.
Yep.
Always tell them I love her. Always when I say bye, going, whatever, right? You tell her as much as you can. And then he'll see that and go, oh, Kim, his fiance, soon to be wife, you know, he might feed off of that. I fed off that from my dad. And so, you know, there's little things you can teach without even saying a word. But the first phone call I made to him when I made the trade was, Matt, I've been trying to get you in my life for 5 years. We've been friends. I've helped you. I've sent you texts. But now I want to help you. And I said, I don't care what you shoot. You could shoot 100 for the rest of your life. That's not what I care about. And so that's where, when you ask about my game of golf, I'm healthy. About almost 2 years from my surgery, where they said I was going to blossom around 2 year mark. Just like any athlete, they have surgery. About the 2 year mark, you start really feeling 100%. And I'm 45, but I feel energetic. I'm excited. And then having people around me, a team, when we can battle together, it's just like Ryder Cup, President's Cup.
Right.
We want to battle with them. Even if we don't hang out for that 1 week, we're best friends.
Totally.
And we are pulling. We are blood, sweat, and tears together. And so that's where my journey of golf right now is at an all-time high, because it's not about me anymore. For years, it was all about me. And I don't care what you want to do. It's about me. And so now it's so much more fun than that.
That's
a long answer, but
it was a great answer. Is it strange to be a mentor? Like, you know, I mean, you mentioned, you're a young person. You come up and you're taking this from this person and you're giving this to this person. Then you get to a point in your career where all of a sudden you can kind of give back to this younger generation that, as you said, you might see some of you in, or you might see them going down a path that you think might not be the right path. Is it strange to be a mentor now in your career?
It is, because of the fact that for so long, I was so selfish.
Right.
Right?
Young people are selfish. We all are like that.
Right. And sometimes you might even creep into the old people as selfish. Because I was kind of in that area too. And so, you know, for me, I was so selfish for so long. And I don't know if many kids, when I say kids, below 30, can be as good as they are without being a little selfish or a lot selfish. But the one person that comes to mind is Jordan Spieth. I've always looked up to Jordan Spieth, even when he was younger, right? He was so, yeah, we all get animated, but man, his mindset, his drive, his parents, I mean, having his sister now married with kids, but like just watching him, yeah, we're always going to have moments, but watching him and how he carries himself and how he is always kind and considerate, I always think of him as older than he truly is, right? And so going back to that, there's no way at that age and that successful, oh my gosh, who knows where I'd be, right? If I was successful as Anthony Kim at his age, I probably would have been dumber than I am, right? And I was pretty dumb. I got a lot of stuff written about me that was pretty dumb. But, you know, so, you know, I now being able to, especially a guy that's willing to listen, a 24-year-old Matt Wolf or anybody else that's willing to listen, I'm thankful for that because, like, Matt's almost – I'm almost double his age. And I'm like, look, man, I'm trying to help you catch stuff before you get to where I'm at and have to write a book about the problems. But – so yeah, it's crazy to think about, but it's overwhelming truly to think about. And I mean, I'll probably tear up, but when people come to me and say, hey man, this book meant this to me, this book did this, and let me tell you what's going on in my life. And it's amazing. I've had volunteers, I've had tournament directors, I've had players, I've had caddies, I've had random people on the streets to tell me about my book and what that meant to them. I mean, so yeah, it's crazy to think that this goofy golfer that's never had a lesson from Baghdad is now looked up to and not only for them but my two kids, right? And I've got to be a leader for them. And so yeah, it's overwhelming to think about all the stuff that I've been able to do and accomplish. This means the most.
Yeah, that I mean, that's awesome. And then I mean, my thought, you know, when I was working with you on the range, then we must have been dumb and dumber
because sure. Which one's dumber?
I think it's day to day. I think it's just day to day. One fits one fits the other. Before we go, Bubba, I do want to ask just two equipment things. One is the grips.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you know, you grow up a young person, you have just a normal grip. I mean, that's how we do it. Maybe you wrap it a couple times. I mean, yours have like 14 wraps under one hand and not so many under the other. When did that start? Why do you do it? And how annoyed do these guys get when they have to regrip your things with 14 exactly on one side?
It's not that bad.
Let's start from the last part. Man, they hate it. When I come in, they're like, man, we got to cut out the whole day. We're only doing Bubba's grips. Got everybody in the factory working.
Is it 14 under the left hand? Is that right?
No, so it depends on the club. Yeah. So the driver's like 10 and 12. You know,
10 wraps on
one top and 12 on the bottom. Okay. I always say top and bottom because he's a lefty. I always get the hands confused. And then his wedge was always bigger. I think it was 11 and 13. But now Spencer's told me you've got another one in there that's like a 12 and 14.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly. We're always trying to help him cut the ball.
Okay.
So the bigger grip helps that. And he sets it like 10 degrees open. And I'm like, there's no way it's 10 degrees. In my opinion, I think it's way more than 10 degrees. But we call it 10 degrees. Like the actual grip. Like if you have the logo of the grip going down, we set.
Is that with the irons? Because, you know, the driver, the irons, and the lob wedge are different.
Correct.
They're all different.
There you are. Those are the three differences.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, that's the grip, the big grip. And then the hard part, you know, putting on the grip, which I don't have to put on the grip, so it's no big deal. But if the guys don't mark down, they can lose count. You know, when you're counting,
of course.
Wait a minute. Did I mark it down or did I not mark it down? I think I did.
And sometimes they redo it.
I
forgot.
Yep. So I'm on 12 or 11. I don't know.
The greatest thing is his feel is so good. He can tell if there's not enough wraps or too many wraps. And then the other thing is the manufacturing process is not perfect. So sometimes the grips are a little different sizing. And then the other thing we do to help him cut the ball is we do a deep heel grind on his irons. So we cut off. There was a time, I think, when he first started with the five fives, which lasted like 10 years. You know, there was a time where he went through it. Hey, we're bending them flatter, trying to get him to cut a little bit more. Felt like the heel was grabbing. So we just, you know, grind off the heel a little bit. And we did the same with the Blueprint S's.
Yeah, the Blueprint.
So you got a nice, but the grips are amazing. I mean, I love showing. We still do have a Bubba driver in there. People come in, they can grab it, and they're like, wow, how come it's on sideways? I said, that's the way he likes it.
Not going to change it.
So
he's a field guy.
There's a lot to uncover here, by the way.
Yes, a lot. Yeah. So, I mean, we're pulling back some serious stuff.
But here's the thing, though. So goes back to how I play golf, right? Charles Howe, I've known him since we were 8 years old. Charles Howe, somewhere 14, something, he had bigger grips. And the reason why he had bigger grips, he wanted, when he choked up, he wanted to kind of feel the same. You can't have it perfect, It has to be a little off, but I think, right?
Because there has rules, to be taper by the USGA
to,
rules.
Yeah. It's got to be tapered a bit.
So it can't be the same. But he used to have that. And, man, I'd grab it, and I'm like, man, that feels great. But then, so now the beauty of ping that people don't talk about enough or people don't realize enough, the beauty of ping, it's all engineers. The Sohan family is pure engineers.
Totally.
It's
true.
Right?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Right. I mean, they're engineers that come.
It's an engineering company.
Right. I mean, we had John Kay was selling stories during COVID. He was down there building golf clubs. You know, I mean, like literally building golf courses in 2020. Right. So, yes, absolutely.
And then, but Carson Manufacturing, they've worked with the military. They've worked with medical. They've done a lot of things behind the scenes that people don't know. And that was Carson Manufacturing. It's the same factory as Ping. It's the same family, same everything. So, so when we think of this, now Bubba Golf, instead of me changing who I am as a person and changing your grip and doing this and your hand's too far this way, let's get it this way, that changed my whole feel off. Let's work with who I am and fix that. Okay, so if we open the grips, then the club, now with my quick hands, you know, I'll just say I have quick hands. I have good feel in my hands and all that stuff. So that's why I played a natural hook. And so now to slow my hands down and my wrists down, let's build the grips up. So we built them up to slow them down from rotating. Mm-hmm. Now we open them. So then that'll help slow down the rotation and keep the face where I want it to be so I can maneuver the ball hooks or slices. Then so that was how I thought of the game of golf. Then the ping just made the engineering work. I didn't know how to make it work, but I said, here's what I want to do. I don't want to change me. I want to change the equipment. That's the beauty of custom equipment.
Right.
Every person, all three of us are going to be different, right? You might like something. I might think this is the worst thing ever, but it works. And Ping is the company that can do it and make it work for you. And one of the things I'm working on right now is a putter. And this is why I said it's a long answer. So I'm working on a putter. I've used this one putter, one style putter, for all 13 wins across the board. It's the same style putter. But then Ping was like, hey, man, why don't we do this putter to make you hit it further? And when I say further, because everybody says I lag putts and I come up short, which I do. But it's easy to say hit it a foot harder. You know, I'm okay. That's my swing. That's my putting stroke.
Correct. This is my feel. Right.
This is who I am as a person. So they said, okay, we're going to make this putter this way. They engineered a putter to hit it harder, and they do, and it does. It does exactly what they wanted it to do. Then they said, hey, your putter face is closing too fast. We're going to change this hosel and make it arc less, and not change you. We're not going to change anything about you, but we're going to change it. Now, what the computer can't tell you, I don't like it. When I look down at it, I'm like, yeah, something doesn't look right here.
Right.
The neck being too long, it makes me feel weird, right? It just the feeling. So my long answer is now we're back to the PLD answer style putter.
Yep.
But that's where when you ask me about the grips and why and what am I doing, now let's go back to that. The driver, I want less open so I can hit the straight bullet when I need it. It's built to slice, cut.
Right.
And so I want it to do that under pressure. But if I need a hole that I got to try to hit one straight, that's where I have the ability to do it. My irons are built. I always say 2 degrees open, 4 degrees open. And so that, because I like the look of it. I can see the face when I set it down on the ground. Now the lob wedge, the reason why it's built higher, because I feel when I'm trying to hit the field shots, the bunker shots or the flop shot or the little shots around
shot
the green.
Shot long on 15 that you were talking about in 14.
And so I'm trying to hit these shots because I use a lob wedge everywhere, bump and runs, spins, flops, everything. So I want it more open and I want it bigger so that I can feel comfortable when I grip this, that I can pull these shots off that I want to pull off. So that's another demand. Going back to Ping, what again is that I use Ping engineers, they use me because the computer can only tell you so much, right? It can tell you if we were perfect robots, these are the perfect clubs.
Right.
But now they need me to test them and hit them and tell them this is what I like and don't like. Now, sometimes they don't like it when I tell them certain answers, but
that's true.
But Christian's one, like, all right, I got to go back and figure this out.
13, we had 13, I think it was 13 clubs or 12 clubs, and they were all one degree apart. And I went through, they set them on the ground, 1 degree apart. And
little test.
And they tested me. Yeah, That was perfect. That was 100.
You nailed
it. I grabbed
it.
I was like, oh, yeah, this one's that.
You got him in a
order. This is that.
No, the great thing about Bubba, what I loved working with Bubba, is because one of his famous quotes was, I think when Trackman first came out, he's like, I don't need Trackman to tell me when I hit a good shot. It's like, true. I know what a good shot is. He wouldn't use it for a while at the start. And then we started using it, and it's like a tool, right? But still, his eye has seen him hit the good shots. He knows what he wants. And so...
And the feel.
Of course.
Trackmans are they can't, the computers can't tell you what it feels like.
Correct.
I'm like, man, this doesn't feel good.
And that's the great thing, too. Whenever we'd bring a new club out, he could hit it once or twice, and he knew right away. And, like, there was no messing around. It was like, we either built it right or it's right for him, and the feel is on, and it's going to be good or not. I can remember, I think it was the Phoenix Open when we came out. It was, like, the 410, and it was, like, on a Sunday, maybe, and we went out and tested the drivers. It was, I think, the 410 Plus, and it was brand new. And he's the first one we tested the driver with because, I mean, he's the best driver in the world,
right?
You
got the fastest car in the world. You might as well use it.
Exactly, right? And so he's out there hammering these shots on the back of the range at TPC, you know, Scottsdale. And they were, I mean, they were beautiful. And I'm just, like, salivating over here. And he hasn't said anything yet. And he's like, this is really good. He kept looking at it. He wasn't saying anything. But it was good. Like, I knew after he hit a couple, he hit more. Like, he likes it, right? Because he could tell me right away. He's like, yeah, take it away. Take it away, Chris. I mean, come on.
One shot, I can be done with it.
Yes,
and that's
exactly.
It. And you know.
Yes. Well,
but that was the black one.
Yes.
There was no,
that
wasn't pink yet.
It wasn't okay. Pink. That's
not
right. We didn't have the pink one yet.
I'm high rent and I need a pink driver. But, I mean, I didn't have a pink driver. And I was like, can I play it? And they said, yeah. I said, I'm going to play this one, but it's black. So I used it for that week, I think.
For sure.
And then the next week I had a pink one, but they were like, I was like, no, I want this one pink. I love this one. Just make
this one. Yeah, because when I remember my boss, Chance Cosby at the time, he said, hey, how'd it go? I said, it's awesome. Like, we got something here.
This,
like, he loves it. I mean, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Bubba, listen, we really appreciate the time. I know you got a busy week, obviously. Same champions dinner menu both times you've won. If you win this week, are we going 3 for 3? Same thing?
100%.
Okay.
Rom said it best in some of his interviews, is that it's a little taste of his heritage. It's a little taste of his grandma. I mean, there's a reasons why we do everything.
Totally.
Right? We can lie and say whatever, but my mom, she's from Mississippi. I'm from the South. It's country cooking. It's home cooking. It's the feel-good foods. It's the foods that everybody likes. And it's an homage to my mom, right? Like, you want my mom to feel special at this event. My dad didn't cook anything for us, so if my dad was still alive, you know, you ain't getting nothing.
last thing. I did read that you eat before the champions dinner in case.
What?
Is that still true? You still power through a couple burritos before the champions dinner?
This week, I will definitely eat before.
Okay, I got
not
you.
Not because...
Listen, that's chestnut checkers, dude. Like, you're thinking outside the box.
People ask, they said why. I said, first of all, we've got the greatest golf tournament ever produced, the greatest sporting event in the world. People don't even play golf are watching this, right? So, yeah, I want comfort food. I want my body to know what we're eating. I want my body to be used to it. And I want to be ready to go in 2 days.
No curveballs.
No curveballs here.
Well, listen, Bob, we really appreciate the time. Good luck this week. Awesome catching up. This is the Ping Proving Grounds podcast.